This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This week, the series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, from Washington, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. We're very happy to have back on the program today Mr. Carlton Putnam, author of the book Race and Reason, A Yankee View, a book which has become a national bestseller. Mr. Putnam, we're glad to have you back on the program again to continue the discussion which we started last week.
Pleasure to be here, Nick.
Mr. Putnam, last week we were discussing the way Americans in various parts of our nation view our current racial problems. And you pointed out that scientists in the field of anthropology, led by Boas, together with some educators and others, worked for many years to create a national climate of opinion favorable to racial integration. Now, how did this philosophy of equalitarianism get started in this country?
The racial equality philosophy goes back, is to my mind, simply a facet of the much broader equalitarian ideology, which is characteristic of the entire, what I call, left-wing overdrift of our era. I would say that its roots go back perhaps 50 years. Now, sometimes people ask me, well, what do you mean by this left-wing overdrift? And perhaps, if you'll permit me, I will explain what I do mean by it.
Please do.
To my mind, the expression left-wing connotes, and I think this is true of most of us, the philosophy which justifies taking the money out of the pocket of the man who earned it and putting it into the pocket of the man who didn't. Now you'll say, may that not sometimes be justified? Actually, of course, if it were done by a private individual, it would be a matter of highway robbery. The government does it, so everything's all right. It's all right up to a point, and it's the point that I'd like to stress just for a second. If you are going to take the money out of the pocket of the man who earned it and put it into the pocket of the man who didn't, you must be awfully sure that you do it to promote social justice and not beyond. If you take this money for the purpose of leveling, it becomes not only, in my judgment, unconstitutional, but certainly immoral. For example, where you go to the point of punitive taxation, where you go to the point of assisting and siding as a government on the side of a labor union, beyond the point where productivity of the union justifies the increase in salaries which the strike brings about. When you go to the point of having relief beneficiaries simply loafing on the relief rolls and you are supporting the improvident at the expense of the provident, there, I say, you have gone over the line where you take the money justifiably and become, really, the government, in a sense, becomes a highwayman in that case. Now, if you were going to promote this kind of a philosophy across the years, if you were one of those who wished to continue to go over this line, what would be the first thing that you would do? The first thing I think that you would do would be to develop a justification. And the justification that you would probably think of first would be, let's assume that we're all equal, that we all should have an even distribution of this world's goods, that we should all be leveled down. And then the next thing that would occur to you would be, we must have some scientific justification for this procedure. Mm-hmm. You would get your scientists together, and you would say, now, gentlemen, those of you who agree with this political view, come up with some scientific justification for it. You would perhaps do what one president of the United States did. He sent certain anthropologists to Africa, and he said, now go to Africa and come back with equalitarian findings. Two or three anthropologists that I know of went through that experience, and they were quite disgruntled. On their return, they said the findings that they made were quite the contrary. I don't know what they told the president. But you can see how a left-wing movement which drifts over the line more and more will be inclined to press in the direction of proving equalitarianism, proving the equality of individuals, and also, mind you, of races, in order to justify this even distribution of all this world's goods, regardless of whether the foundation is sound scientifically. Now, my study of the matter, my discussions with scientists have convinced me that the truth does not lie on the side of the equalitarian scientific philosophy. My studies have convinced me that this is a deliberately cultivated, politically motivated, misleading and distorting interpretation of racial science.
You're from New England, Mr. Putnam. You received your education in the North at Princeton and Columbia. Would you say that the average Northerner understands the Southern position on race? Has the South presented its case in terms the North can accept?
Well, I think the South has been restrained and constrained to use the states' rights argument in this fight because it wished to avoid hurting the feelings of the Negro. And there are many estimable Negroes. And I have the utmost sympathy for the Negro, for example, who's got large amounts of white blood. It's a very unfortunate and unhappy state of affairs. But I don't think, to begin with, that it's necessary to be as blunt, nor do I think it's correct to be as blunt, as many today would be in connection with interpreting my point of view. For instance, they say Putnam believes that the Negro race is inferior to the white. I don't put it that way. What I say is that the Negro has certain limitations in regard to, vis-a-vis, as the French would say, our white culture. They're not inferior when it comes to their capacity to live according to their own civilization in the Congo. I'm not saying that God regards them as inferior. I'm saying that as far as our white civilization is concerned, they do have certain genetic limitations. Now, that's a tactful way of putting this subject. It cannot be contradicted. I think the South has unfortunately felt that in order to avoid hurting the Negro's feelings, it had to drop the whole subject. And I have consistently taken the position that the South must now recognize that the time has come where kindness of that kind, being imposed upon as it has been, ceases to be a virtue and becomes a vice.
And when the South seeks to explain its position by using states' rights as the argument, how does this appear to the North?
I wish that the South would appreciate this fundamental difficulty in the minds of Northerners and Westerners on this subject. It does no good to talk states' rights alone without relation to this problem. Let me give you an extreme illustration. Suppose that a state passed a law requiring that all red-headed people should be shot on Christmas morning. I think you would understand it if the North at that point said, well, you shouldn't use states' right to defend that kind of mass murder. Now, obviously, this racial question is not that serious. But in the minds of many Northerners, it approaches it. They regard the attitude of the South towards the Negro as something which is pretty morally heinous. I mean, something that is very reprehensible. Because they are imbued with this view that the differences between the races are purely environmental, that the North, the South is responsible for creating an environment which has brought the Negro down rather than the reverse, and that therefore the South should be made to do something about it. Now, as long as the North feels that way about this question, they are going to back the government in doing this, bringing these pressures to bear upon you here in the South. And as long as they have the feeling, it does no good to talk states' rights. If you must talk states' rights, for heaven's sakes, pick a better ground for it. Mm-hmm. Because the idea of the mass murder is an extreme one, but try to think of that when you think about why the North is not behind the states' rights argument, not in sympathy with it, in this connection.
But assuming that the Northerner feels this way, how can you account for the very obvious racial segregation existing in the North today? Why are there all Negro neighborhoods and Negro schools and Negro churches in every northern city of any size?
I think the problem is universal. I think all of us unconsciously realize what the situation is, and in North and South, I think that there's a terrific division inside a dichotomy in the minds of Northerners on this question. They think they ought to take integrationist position for some moral or Christian reason, and yet their basic inner subconscious instinct is against it, and their basic inner subconscious instinct is correct. And they have been so influenced by this combination of Boaz and the general left-wing social drift that they just don't know what to do.
Mr. Putnam, using our Western European civilization as a yardstick, is there any evidence to indicate that one race has a greater capacity for adapting to civilization and culture than another race might have?
I think the word maturity of a civilization can be applied to a race as well as to perhaps a human being. It takes time to mature. Mm-hmm. And I think the scientific evidence today indicates clearly that the Negro race is a younger race than the white race.
I understand that a new book by one of the recognized authorities in the field of anthropology shows that the white race is several hundred thousand years ahead of the Negro in the evolutionary process. Could you tell us something about this?
The recent book on the subject is, of course, Dr. Kuhn's new book, The Origin of Races, and the difference is about 200,000 years, as it now appears. Of course, this is confirmed from many sources. It's confirmed from histology, it's confirmed from anatomy, it's confirmed from morphology, it's confirmed from history. I would like to suggest that all of those who are interested in this subject avail themselves of the opportunity to get a copy of the George Report.
I'd like to interrupt at this point, if I may, to say that the George Report you just mentioned, the title is The Biology of the Race Problem by Dr. W.C. George, is available to our listeners. A copy may be obtained by sending 50 cents to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. Be sure you request the George Report. Send your order to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. Now, Mr. Putnam, could you tell us something about Dr. George?
Dr. George is professor of anatomy at the, was professor of anatomy for many years at the University of North Carolina Medical School. Uh-huh. And he quotes many scientists in his book, 90% of whom are not Southerners. Uh-huh. They don't all take a position on integration, but he quotes their evidence, which all tends towards the inequality of the races in regard to adaptability to our Western European civilization.
Our time has gone by very quickly today, Mr. Putnam. Thank you very much for being with us, and I'll be looking forward to having you again on the program in the very near future. Our guest on today's edition of Citizens Council Forum has been Mr. Carlton Putnam, businessman, attorney, and author of the bestseller, Race and Reason, A Yankee View. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew speaking coast to coast, saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, assisted by a grant from the Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, an official agency of the state of Mississippi. Join us next week for another informative discussion and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedom.